In America, we have a right to speak freely to another individual as well as to a group of any size. If the recipient of what's said doesn't agree with your words or content, they can leave the auditorium, block you on social media, and even sue you if they choose to. Whatever path that objecting person takes, your ability to speak freely continues. My next guest with her new book reveals how those avenues of objection aren't enough for some who want to terminate viewpoints opposing theirs. Her book is The Silencing, How the Left is Killing Free Speech. She's a columnist for USA Today, Fox News contributor, Kirsten Powers. Good morning, Kirsten.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for being here. From someone from the political side that you are on, this might be surprising to somebody because you are calling out many of those on your side, albeit to the extreme, versus what you have a more balanced and more rational view. And, you know, I think of when I'm reading The Silencing, thinking of how much social media like Facebook has come to waste because you have a platform with in excess of a billion people, I guess, at this point. But it seems like everyone in that platform is just looking for the head nodders, not looking for debate and learning experiences. And that's a lot of what you write about in The Silencing.
Yeah, well, I would say two things. First of all, the people that I'm calling out, I call the illiberal left. And while I may agree with them on a lot of policy issues or even vote for the same people, where I would disagree with them and where I think most, you know, your average Democrat or even your average liberal would disagree with them is that they're intolerant for being able to hear other people's views or even allow other people's views to be expressed. The second thing I would say is that it's true social media has definitely fed into this problem. But if you look at a lot of the examples in my book, social media isn't even a factor in what happens. Things that happen where, I have an example of a student at the University of Alaska Fairbanks who wrote a satirical piece for the April Fool's Day edition, where she was sort of mocking the Women's Studies Department and joked that in honor of the Women's Studies Department, they were going to build a building in the shape of a female anatomy part. And one of the Women's Studies professors was offended, and she went and she filed a complaint against the newspaper, a sexual harassment complaint, actually, against the newspaper. And the newspaper ended up being under investigation for 8 months, and this student's life was turned absolutely upside down. And the kicker of the story is the student was herself a feminist and was, you know, a pro-choice Democrat. And as you can see, social media had nothing to do with it. It just took one professor being upset, and, you know, and they had campus security actually visit the newspaper at one point. And so there are a lot of examples where sometimes it is a social media phenomenon, but oftentimes it's not.
And another example that you write about, too, there was a student group that wanted to hand out copies of the Constitution on a college campus that bothered a professor for some unthinkable reason. And the professor's response was to encourage the police to have the students arrested. Why? Because they constructed an unauthorized structure, which was the table they had the Constitution copies on.
Right. Yeah, well, and also what happens a lot, too, is that if somebody tries to, you have students trying to hand out the Constitution on Constitution Day outside of the so-called, sort of ironically Orwellian-named free speech zones, and that have been set up on university campuses where these are the only places you're allowed to express free speech, and you often have to get pre-approval, sometimes 10 days of pre-approval for it. On campuses that are public universities, these are unconstitutional. They've been ruled, they've been struck down by courts, and yet they still keep cropping up all across the country. And, the irony of trying to hand out the Constitution and then basically being told you don't have the free speech rights on a campus to be doing something like that because you haven't gotten pre-approval from an administrator, it just shows you the level of the problem we're dealing with there.
Kirsten Powers, The Silencing, How the Left is Killing Free Speech, columnist of USA Today, Fox News Channel contributor, and you're listening to Issues and Ideas. Yet when you walk into the classroom and hear what some of the professors are spewing, it's like, okay, that's either preaching or, is that professor standing in the free speech zone? Because some of the things that fall out of their mouths isn't worthy of a septic tank, quite frankly.
Well, one of the things also that's notable is that most what seems offensive and out of bounds is almost always a conservative or an orthodox Christian view. It's not that some Christian got offended walking past a pro-choice demonstration. It's that you have, an example that I use, and some people may have heard of the University of California, Santa Barbara, a feminist studies professor who physically attacked a pro-life demonstrator for peaceful pro-life demonstration where she had stolen their sign, and then when she was arrested, portrayed herself as the victim because she shouldn't have had to come in contact with views that basically offended her or upset her or made her feel unsafe.
And her act of violence against the students, she called that her First Amendment right, if I'm remembering correctly.
Yes, exactly. Yes, and I interviewed the students who were involved in it, and they described a pretty terrifying scene where the professor had come up and she had some of her students with her, and she started this chant against them of tear down the sign, and they were surrounded by this group, and these are just peaceful demonstrators, being treated as if they're assailants.
You write about in The Silencing how anyone who is disagreed with or is attacked by charges of racism, sexism, Islamophobia, as being an Islamophobe, a homophobe, in the case of a same-sex marriage. But when you look at, not just on the college campus, but how government, especially in the current administration, and not just solely, I mean, we in New Jersey about 3 or 4 years ago, there was actually a bill in the state assembly that was calling for the ban of the sale of any book by Ann Coulter, just to give you an example of how far people can go. And people laugh at it when they hear it, think, oh, that's just a little jokey, soapbox display by some radical politician. But the joke bills like that get the same amount of time for debate, the same cost to print them all up. And it's just a parallel of a bill that would be something for something major and serious. But when you look at the Obama administration, how they've isolated Fox or attempted to isolate Fox News in a couple of cases did, spying on reporters, that seems like just something to further empower the dissenters to do the radical things that they do.
Yeah, I don't think anybody should laugh, actually. And sometimes I even laugh at them, and then I say, well, don't do that. And I've told people that because some of it seems so absurd that people kind of roll their eyes and they laugh. And I think that's a mistake, because what you just described of, trying to ban a book is actually not that far removed from what's happening already and from the arguments that are being made by the people who are doing the silencing. And so I interviewed Floyd Abrams, who is a renowned First Amendment scholar, a liberal himself, who is very alarmed by what's going on in the progressive legal community, which is that they are basically moving in the direction of this idea that the First Amendment is not a bulwark against government. It's not supposed to protect you from the government. It's actually an impediment against implementing progressive policies. So you do have people, very high profile, legal First Amendment scholars giving speeches like the dark side of the First Amendment, where it's actually seen as problematic and something that needs to be watered down. So I think that example of the Ann Coulter book is more of a canary in the coal mine than something to be laughing at.
Yeah, if someone didn't think they had the chance to make at least have an attempt to make this pass through, they wouldn't be trying it. Much like with, you had the college campus, it might have been Vanderbilt, I'm going off the top of my head here, there was a Christian group or Christian yep. groups who were called to consider non-Christians to be the leaders of their groups. So I'm reading yep. you're relating to that story. I'm thinking, okay, they can certainly put them in and just easily dismiss them. But then how far away from that is the college basically putting quotas in, saying, all right, you've interviewed, example, however many number of non-Christians, you now have to put a non-Christian in as a leader of your group.
Well, I mean, the thing about InterVarsity, it was the InterVarsity Graduate Christian Fellowship at Vanderbilt, and I interviewed the leader of it, and they were, they were ultimately de-recognized by the university because they refused to go along with these rules. They have Christian members. It's not, non-Christian members. That's not an issue. The group is open to everybody, but they do have criteria for their leaders, as does every single group in existence. There's not a single group. The gay rights group does not have people who don't believe in gay rights leading their group, nor should they, nor should they be required to. And yet, Tish Warren is her name, and I interviewed her, and she said she was being told by campus administrators that she could not require her Bible study leaders to believe in the Trinity. And, just stop and think about that for a second. The idea that somebody who is, and the other thing that's interesting about her is that as many of the examples in the book are not actually conservative. She describes herself as a progressive. She's never voted for a Republican. But she has Orthodox Christian beliefs. And so she said, she always sort of felt that she was, fit in on the campus. And then it became very clear, she wrote something in Christianity Today, actually the title was The Wrong Kind of Christian, which is they're fine with Christians except for Christians who are Orthodox Christians and who aren't willing to water down their beliefs.
Making a horse analogy here as we wrap things up with Kirsten Powers with the book The Silencing, blinders on a horse are considered to be a good thing because it keeps the horse focused, especially if they're in a thoroughbred horse race, and keep from jumping a rail or colliding with other horses. Blinders in political debate and discussion are a negative, and what Kirsten points out with The Silencing, how the left is killing free speech, is that just that. The free ability to exchange ideas, to learn from each other through dissent, is being eliminated by those with blinders on, and that's something that needs to be addressed, and some people are concerned because of what students are being indoctrinated with in colleges and experiencing on college campus life. The fear is that they're going to bring that into the quote-unquote real world and just further the limiting of dissent and the death of free speech. But hopefully the voice of dissent will be more along the lines with the common sense. And Kirsten points out in The Silencing, how the left is killing free speech, columnist of USA Today, as well as Fox News contributor. And Kirsten, thanks so much for helping us realize what is happening out there, what is being endangered, and the value of it. And thanks for being here this morning.
Oh, thanks for having me. Have a great day.